Welcome to Sex on the Floor podcast. This podcast was created to help educate the public about problems with sex and intimacy and how this is tied to both physical and mental aspects. Hosted by myself, Dr. Molly Hart, a passionate pelvic floor physical therapist and owner of Pelvic Balance Physical Therapy, and by Dr. Katie Schubert, a phenomenal sex therapist and owner of Cypress Wellness Center. We are here to have a good time. We're here to keep it real with you all and to educate along the way. I'm so excited for you to join us. We strive to help many relationships prosper in fun, safe, and healthy intimacy. While listening to the show, please remember that this information is not meant to diagnose or treat any medical conditions. Please speak with your medical provider for all things related to your healthcare. Hello, all. Welcome back to Sex on the Floor podcast with Dr. Katie Schubert and myself, Dr. Molly Hart. We have, a pretty fun episode for you today. So I'm going to let Dr. Katie tell you what we're going to talk about in this episode.
Hello, everyone. today we are going to be talking about one of the questions that I get asked probably the most frequently by couples and, by individuals too. And that is how often couples should be having sex. And just to get like straight to the point and give you like the definitive finite answer to this question, it's that there is no answer to this question. And that's what I always say. Nobody likes that answer because it's a very like non-answer. But it's a true answer. It's really dependent on a tremendous amount of things. So I guess what we can do, Molly, is just kind of go over the factors and talk about them. Probably the biggest factor is how often you want to be having sex. Relationship, and that it varies. It varies tremendously. People's sexual desire in couples is very different. You know, one person can enjoy having sex once a month. Someone else would want it every day. Some other people don't think about it ever until it's brought to their attention that perhaps, you know, they should think about it, or their partner wants to have sex. So, you know, desire is very person specific. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Molly.
Yeah. I mean, that's something I learned from you that I use a lot with my patients now is, and they never even have these conversations with their partners. I'm like, well, how often, you know, do you want to have sex? I'll tell you, a lot of my patients, my females are like, well, I'd be fine if I never had sex ever again. You'll hear that a lot from my specific patient population. And I say, well, how often would your husband want to have sex? How often would your partner want to have sex? And they go, well, I don't really know. Probably all the time. I'm like, have you ever asked them? Almost never. With very often, this isn't a topic of conversation, and it should be. So what I would just say is, like, I really encourage anyone listening is have that conversation with yourself and have a heart to heart with yourself, and not give an answer that you think you should be giving, but an answer that is your true answer. Like, it is okay to say, I never want to have sex. It is okay to say, I want to have sex 3 times a day. All of it's okay. An analogy I give that I think hits home a lot with my patients is, I always say to everyone, I go, listen, when you're in a monogamous relationship, I go, you can go to dinner and out to eat with anybody, right? You can go work out with other people. You can share your finances with other people and start a business with them. You can do social interactions, anything that you like to do as a human, you can do. But the one thing in a monogamous relationship you can't do with another person is you can't have sex with another person, except for that person you decided to marry. It's the only thing, if you think about it, that has to be shared. You can hug your child. You can kiss your child. You can do all these intimate things with your family members and with your kids. But like actual intercourse, you have one person that you're allowed to have sex with in a monogamous relationship. If you have open relationship, maybe there's other rules that you've opened to, but it does that, I think, is what creates more of, I don't know, a conflict or a difficulty with that question is you have to really talk to your partner, and where do you guys meet in the middle, since that is something you guys are only allowed to do together in a monogamous relationship. An analogy I also give with that is, how often do you want to go work out? Do you want to go work out all the time? Does your partner like to work out 5 times a week, but you would never want to work out? And that's okay. Society says that's acceptable. But if you only want to have sex once a month and your partner wants to have sex daily, now we're upset with each other. So if you think about it, this topic is no different than a lot of activities that we participate together as a couple. That's how I view it, at least.
Yeah. And you know what's tricky about it is that in couples with in monogamous, so it is important to clarify that we're talking about monogamous couples here. In monogamous couples, there's always a certain level of desire discrepancy, and that is perfectly fine. It's normal, it's natural. The issue is, the problem is that more likely than not, the two people in the relationship aren't going to get exactly what they want. But like you said, that's with everything in a marriage, right? Like if you're with someone, if you're in a relationship with someone, you're not going to be living your life exactly the way that you want to live it, because it's really important to compromise in relationships. And I'm not, but by all means, I am not saying have sex if you don't want to. I'm just saying it's important to find a compromise in a relationship when it comes to sex. If there is a desire discrepancy, sometimes that's easier to navigate if sex is planned in relationships. So like if you have like a sexy Sunday where you have a whole week to prepare yourself, psychologically, that Sunday is going to be your sexy day with your partner, and you're going to set that time aside and that day aside for intimate activities. But it is really important to sit down with your partner and find a compromise that works well for both of you, that you guys can both live with in a relationship.
Like, I'll give some examples. I can think of like three people I just recently worked with. One, so interesting. She's like, I'd be fine having sex, once a week, but my husband has a very high libido. So they actually took like an online sex course, they told me. And so they have sex planned now 3 times a week, and it's really made a huge difference in her life. She's also somebody who has a personal trainer, because she's somebody who doesn't have good self-accountability. So as long as it's planned and it's with somebody, she'll do it. And you have to understand that our sexual habits in a couple, I believe, it's a habit. It truly is a habit. And so I tell people all the time, I think this is a funny example. I go, listen, so it's the end of the night. You're exhausted. You worked all day. You took care of the kids. You finally sit on the couch watching your favorite TV show. And then your husband comes up to you and he's like, babe, let's get a workout in right now. Like, let's go into our gym and do our workout. You'd be like, what? No, like, I just sat down. My mind wasn't prepared to work out. I was prepared to sit here and rest. Okay, that's no different than if your husband comes up and starts kissing you and he's like, I want to have sex right now, and whatever body language or verbal language he uses. That's why I think often people can be like, what? No, like, I don't want to have sex right now. Like, I just want to sit down. And so when it's that surprise, like, that we all think about with sex, like, oh, it's got to be in the moment. Okay, well, not necessarily, because that in the moment, maybe your mind wasn't ready for that. Maybe you were ready to sit there and do nothing. Just like you aren't in the moment to spontaneously go work out whenever you want. Sex is a physical activity, just like working out is. So we're not always going to be in the mood to be physical, right? So I don't think it's a bad thing if some couples decide to have a planned day or a planned time frame or structure in the week that says, hey, on this and these days, on this time, we're going to prioritize sexual intimacy together. That creates a beautiful habit. And so, if it's something that's important for both of the partners or more for the other, and you're in that compromise, I think it's a beautiful thing to do the planning
Yeah.
aspect of it.
A lot of people fight me on this, and they say, well, that's really unsexy. But I think that's a reframing. Like, if I could just reframe that thought for a moment, if you think about going through your work week, working, doing the kid stuff, if you have kids, doing the day-to-day stuff, and in the back of your head, Sunday you're going to be able to have this time with your partner. I mean, that's kind of like a lot of foreplay, if you think about it, like psychological foreplay, that you can do with yourself and with your partner. So I think that if we can reframe that, like planning sex is unsexy thing, you can really take advantage of that time in between your sexy dates to, say little things to your partner about su the Sunday coming up, or get yourself excited for that time that you have with them.
Right. And I think if there, let's say there's two people in the relationship that have a very high desire and they are always wanting to have sex or masturbate, that's just kind of constantly on their mind. They're probably not going to need to plan it because there's going to be a lot of times when both people are going to want to participate. And that can be fun. But to have two people with a high desire like that, I would say is not always the common or the norm even. Like it can happen, it can happen, but think about it. When we're picking a life partner in a monogamous relationship, it's not about just the sex. There's so many things you're looking for in a life partner. So maybe your desires match up, maybe they don't. I'm sure you guys listening, I know I have been with people where I had a very strong desire and they had a strong desire, but I was like, they are not going to make a good husband. I'm not going to marry this person, right? So we have to look at all aspects of a partner we're picking. And so if your desires don't match up, that's not a bad thing. That's, I would say, very normal. And so if you're one of those people who has a lower desire than your partner, or maybe you both have a lower desire, if you then plan it like we're talking about on here, that allows you to get in that headspace to really focus on one another and prioritize things that are very important to prioritize in a marriage. If you both deem that's an important thing to prioritize. So it's important to understand, I guess. It's very different when we're talking about somebody with a very high libido and somebody who doesn't have a high libido. Because if you don't, then you're just never going to do it. It's like you're never going to work out, right? You haven't been working out. You need to work out. You don't have a desire to work out. Well, it ain't just going to start. Your practice of working out isn't just going to start happening until you decide, I'm going to do this and probably hire somebody to help you to create that habit, right? So it's the same thing to me. I view it as the same allocation to priority and habit building.
Right. And I think, this is one of those things that will break up a relationship. If you're unable to find a compromise that works mostly well for both of you, again, not perfectly well, because that's never going to happen. Mostly well is what we're shooting for. This is one of those things that it does break up relationships, or it puts a lot of tension in relationships if people are feeling like their sexual needs are unfulfilled, or if people are feeling like they're being pressured into having sex all the time. Which is why this compromise is so crucial.
Yep. And I've got people from both perspectives, so let's get away from the stereotypes of, women have a lower desire than men. I can share an example right now where I have had a patient where her husband had a very low sex drive and she had a very high sex drive. And it's interesting, it does affect, I find, women and men differently. Women, we feel so unattractive. We feel so undesired when our male partner doesn't want to have sex with us all the time because it's something maybe we're not used to, right? So maybe we've only been with men who just always want to have sex all the time. And now you're with a partner who has a lower libido. It can affect females in a different way than I find it affects my male patients. Most women that come to see me that have pain with sex, let me tell you right now, this is something I learned early on. They do not come to see me because they're having pain with sex. That is not why they have to come. They come because their husbands are very upset about this and it's causing a massive strain in the relationship. And so they're seeing me because their relationship is struggling and they are very worried about the future of their relationship. That's why they come to see me. They don't necessarily want to be working on this, but they know they have to be working on it because it's that important to their male partner. So anyways, it's something that I think does need to be very respected. Respected if somebody has a high libido, respected if somebody has a low libido and not forcing them to have sex all the time. But also this person over here who has a high libido, understanding like that is a very, to me, biological need. And so if we can't meet in the middle, this is going to be a problem.
It often is, as you know. The other factor I think that is really important to consider here is whether or not there are children in the relationship. Because
Huge factor.
we're just not going to happen as often.
Sorry, it's just so funny. Okay.
But it doesn't really, it doesn't. It seems so obvious to you and I, Molly, but I think for a lot of people, especially like new parents struggling with this, they may not realize how quickly like sex just falls off as a priority. And there's lots of reasons for that. You have kids you need to take care of. Their physical presence is often a barrier. And then also both people in the relationship are usually pretty exhausted and drained. Especially with breastfeeding mamas, what I hear a lot is, if another person touches me, I'm going to lose my mind.
No,
So
it's true.
yeah, and that's normal and natural, and it's a season in a relationship. And I think it's really important for both people in the relationship to acknowledge that it is a season. It's not something that's going to last forever. It's not something that you're not going to come back from. It's where you are in the relationship, and you're going to have lots of seasons in your relationship, and this is just one of them. There's going to be other things that happen that will impede in your intimacy with your partner, but so long as you guys have a decent foundation, like you'll weather it out, to go with the metaphor.
I love that word season, and I use that a lot when I'm talking to my patients. I'll say you're in a season of hardship, because you're dealing with pain, because you're dealing with just being in a postpartum body. Let's say we're talking about that. It's so important to understand as humans, you're going to go through so many different seasons of life. You will go through seasons of intense happiness and peace and ease. You will go through seasons of exhaustion and hardship for different reasons. And the dream world that we fabricate in our mind of being married, of having kids, of all these things, it's very important to understand that that dream world we concoct in our mind is not reality. Okay. And so, like, I think becoming an adult is a big smack in the face of like the dreams you have. There are moments of that dream, they do exist, but only a percentage of the time, and the other percentage of the time, more of the percentage of the time, is reality. And it can be hard, and you're going to have different seasons, and you can have moments where you get back into that dream world, and you can have moments where you're like in the shitter. And so I guess when it comes to kids and postpartum, is number one, you're both exhausted. Number two, you're in a huge learning phase. You're learning how to do something you've never had to do before, which is becoming a mom or becoming a dad. Your body as a woman, you just spent, 9, 10 months making a human, and now you're trying to rehab your body. You don't feel sexy and connected in your body after you have a baby. Like, at least I didn't. I shouldn't say you don't, but that's a common thing I hear from a lot of women. And so, desire has a lot to do with how you feel in your own body. So it's very normal for women to not want to have as much of a desire during that time. You're also giving all of your resources, all of your time, your energy, your thoughts to this little beautiful human baby. And so you don't really have anything left in the tank to give to your partner at that point. And so that's another thing. Like, you're also not working out, right? Not often. Probably. I talk to most, that's what they're coming to see me for, is I'm helping them to get back their body to strengthen it again, because they don't want to. So I'm helping with the accountability of that, because we don't have a lot of energy. So it's hard to give that time energy to anything, let alone to desire and intimacy. Because of the phase you're at as well, in this hardship kind of rehab, sleep deprived mode, you're not in a very strong, what we call like parasympathetic state. So that's that rest and digest state. That's the state where we actually have a stronger desire, by the way. So when we're in a more sympathetic fight or flight state, where we're really go, 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 which is what you're going to be in postpartum, the body doesn't want to have a strong desire. It doesn't make sense to have sex. And that's just a typical biology of the human. And so giving yourself grace for that, you just birth the baby out of the vaginal canal, or you had a C-section, like, you're physically want to be careful with yourself. So there's so many things that go into after you have a baby that are going to massively impact desire. And I would just say, if you're planning on having kids, please expect that that's going to happen. And your pretend ideal dream world of what you think it's going to be, it probably won't be that majority of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important also, I think, to say, like, this goes way past like the perinatal stage. Even I think, even you and I, Molly, I have a 5-year-old, 6-year-old. Granted, I also have a 1-year-old, but even if I didn't have the 1-year-old, my 5 and my 6-year-old would be exhausting by themselves. So just like this season, right? This phase of having humans depending on you, who won't wake up by themselves and go get breakfast by themselves, who won't go to bed by themselves. When they're this dependent on you, that it's so much physical energy, it's so much emotional energy, and it's less that you have for yourself, and it's less that you have for your partner.
It's a season.
And I think so long as you are communicative with your partner about this, and you're both acknowledging, I still love you, I'm still very attracted to you, I got nothing to give to you right now, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's okay if that's lower on the priority list for a while because you have other things that are, consuming your priorities. It's when people think that they are supposed to be having more sex than they are, or if you're not able to come to a compromise with your partner about, the time spent having sex, that's when there's an issue in the relationship.
And it's not talked about. It's also important to understand. I mean, I've had this conversation really since I've known Katie now with my husband multiple times, like a constant check-in. I would say probably every 6 months-ish, especially as we've added kids, is like, hey, where's your desire? Where's your libido at? And I will tell you, my husband's has changed during the different phases. Mine has changed. I've had moments where mine's really high. I've had moments where mine's really low. And so it's not just checking in once with your partner about that. It's actually constantly checking in with that and having that conversation, because it changes as we hormonally change as women going through perimenopause and then menopause. Men also have shifts as they age. So where you are now is not where you will be 6 months from now or a year from now. Life can throw hardship at you, like you lose a job or there's a death in the family. That will massively affect desire. So there's so many things to consider, and communication's key of constantly checking in a monogamous relationship in this area, and seeing are both people's needs being met. And if not, where can we come together to where I see you and I'm not going to give you everything you need, right? Like you want to have sex every day. I never want to have sex. Well, where's the middle ground? Maybe we have sex once a week, maybe twice a week, and maybe we plan it and we schedule it. And then my partner now knows, like, I'm thinking of that side of you, and I'm gonna work really hard to try to compromise and meet you there, because I understand that's a really important need for you. And also, thank you for not forcing me or expecting me to have sex with you every day, because that's not gonna happen either. So.
So another factor I see. So the presence of kids, desire discrepancy. Another thing that I see a lot of having to do with going into the answer of the question, like how often should I be having sex, is what the home life looks like in terms of, who's working and how much they're working, who's doing most of like the household management stuff. I mean, there's so much wrapped into that by
A
itself.
lot, especially that household management part.
Often, that's known as like the second shift, right? And traditionally, women are expected to do a lot of that work, which leaves women feeling especially depleted if they also have a job outside of the house. This is changing quite rapidly with the newer generations. But with the older generations, I mean, the second shift was predominantly done by women, and they therefore had less energy to give to their husbands or their partners at the end of the day because they had their full-time job and they had their second shift at home. Whereas men typically, traditionally, have their outside of the house work and then they come home and they relax. Again, changing a whole lot, but it's really important to consider not only how much energy people have at the end of the day to give to each other in a partnership, but also if resentments are building, right? Like if a woman traditionally, and again, I'm specifying this because I think it's important. I'm seeing this a lot less in younger generations. My family, I'm a full-time worker. My husband's a stay-at-home dad. So that works beautifully for our family. But that I don't think that would have happened, 40 years ago.
No, and it's super common. I have a ton of friends. I have three of my very close friends where that's their dynamic in their relationship.
And it works beautifully because He handles so much. And also the resentments aren't there, right? Because we each know our roles and we each know what's expected. And we feel like everything is fairly balanced in the relationship because as most of us, I think, know, household management, it's a full-time job.
It
If
is
you
a
have,
full-time job.
yeah. So he has a full-time job, I have a full-time job, and we're set. But again, communication between two people in a relationship is so important. Like checking in not only about libidos, but like, are you building up any resentment towards me about how things are being handled in this family? Because if there are resentments being built up, the last thing you're gonna want to do with your partner is have sex with them.
100%. And you lose respect. So as resentments build up, respect is lost, and nobody wants to have sex with somebody that they resent. A big term I use a lot with my husband is, so my husband and I both work, but we both share very much so the household responsibilities, and in every way, shape, and the form. And my family, at least, we have designated roles actually of like what we're responsible for. So the mind doesn't have to think about everything. So I do all the laundry, for instance. He does all the dishes. We equally split cooking. We equally split watching the kids. He does all of the automobile maintenance. I do all of the household management unless something's broken. Like we have very set, just very set roles because that helps us navigate and work as a team. I view marriage very much so like a team. But more importantly and more simply, what I will say to him is, I want an equal. I want my partner to be an equal. I don't want to be better than you. I don't want to be doing more than you. I don't want to feel like I'm drowning while you're up on a rowboat. And so we've had many check-ins with that, especially as we've had kids, because there's been times where I didn't feel like my husband was an equal. I felt like I was suffering more, I was doing more, and I wasn't okay with that. And these constant check-ins and making sure that we're on the same page together. And what that leads to is it leads to an incredible amount of respect, an incredible amount of love. And to me, for me, nothing is sexier than when I come home and my husband has, like yesterday, I came home from work and I had a plate of salmon, asparagus, and potatoes. I had meal prepped. I had gotten the food. I had told him what to cook, but he cooked it all. The house was spotless clean. The dishes were done. And he made me, got me a kombucha. He knows I love that. And then after, he made me a glass of tea because he knows I love that. Right. So, like, nothing to me turned the girl on more than that for me. I'm like, okay, so you just like took care of of me, and we shared equal roles here. So when you have a partner that you feels like a true equal and is truly there for you, desire spikes. So that's another thing, is if your partner has a low desire, are there things in the relationship that are contributing to them having a less desire for you, and a resentment and a respect issue that's starting to form?
Yeah. And a really fantastic book. I know a lot of people have heard about this, having to do with exactly what you're talking about, Molly, specifically female sexuality, is Come As You Are. It does a really, really special job at explaining what women's psychology has to do with their libido. So if what Molly said resonated with you, perhaps pick up the book and popcorn read it with your partner.
And I think it's important to understand that men and women do have different things that will spike their desire. And so understanding your partner more, because everyone's different, understanding what does spark my partner's desire is another factor, and all of this, and you guys trying to find a compromise of meeting each other's desire needs.
I'm trying to think if there's any other factors that are really loud when we're talking about this question, how often should I be having sex? So we talked about whether or not kids are present. We talked about desire discrepancy. We talked about jobs in and out of the home. Can you think of anything else, Molly, that's
Well, big things with being a public floor PT is, health issues, right? So if your partner has a health issue, I have a lot of men who have erectile dysfunction because they have pelvic floor dysfunction. I have women who have true, actual, physical issues that are causing pain with intercourse. And so if there's a health concern that's happening, you have to consider that in there. And that's not even about what your partner might want. It's about what can their physical body actually do. And for men, can they actually get an erection to be able to have vaginal intercourse doesn't have to be that. That's another thing that's important to understand is that sex can be a very broad term for a lot of different aspects of intimacy. And so, people with spinal cord injuries, right? Like there's different ways in which we can be physically intimate with each other. So that's something to factor in is there health concerns going on? And how do we navigate that together? And of course, if you're having a hard time with that, that's what Katie's for. That's where, I mean, for real though, that's where like a sex psychologist comes in is we're having a hard time communicating and navigating this. We don't have any tools in our toolbox. We weren't educated enough on this. We're getting stuck. No problem. Like you sign up for a session. Let's talk about that with somebody who is an expert in this area and knows how to help you guys problem solve what's going on.
Right. Yeah.
So
I mean, as you can see in this very short talk that Molly and I had, there are a lot of factors that go into it, and we did not touch on them all. There are a lot of other, like, more specific things. I would say if you're struggling with this question, or if your relationship is struggling because there's a desire discrepancy in it that doesn't feel resolved or like it could be compromised, sit down and talk to your partner about it. Just have a really open dialogue. I know that that can feel scary, especially if you're the person who feels like you're not giving enough because you think that by bringing it up, you're going to highlight it and put it front and center. But I guarantee you that you're both thinking about it and it's already front and center. So you speaking to it directly and saying it out loud, it's just going to kill all the shame that you have around it. You're going to feel better after talking about it, especially if you have like a supportive partner. If it's not handled gently in the relationship, it's probably not going to go so well, and that's probably when you're going to want to get in to see a therapist. But
And if
talk
you
about.
don't, like if you don't address it, and because this happens a lot with my patients, they just don't want to talk about sex ever, is it's festering in the background. So we can keep ignoring, but it's festering, and it's building serious issues and resentment in the relationship. So it's a slow burn of the relationship, but it's happening. So we have two choices. You can directly hit it, which is hard. Like you can directly talk about it, which is hard. It's also hard to keep ignoring it and allow the relationship to keep slowly crumbling in the background. So both paths are hard. You pick your hard, is what I say.
Yeah. And talking about it will ultimately make it more consumable, right? Like you'll the issue. And then also, start with safe touches. So like if you're the person who is touched out completely and is just not interested in sex, prioritizing sex, ask your partner to give you some safe touches. And I say that, for me, for an example, it's always a safe touch if somebody wants to play with my head and my hair. Like, I will welcome that anytime. Even if I'm touched out, even if I'm exhausted, even if I'm laying in bed falling asleep, I will welcome that whenever. So I think everybody has those kind of touches. And in the moments where you feel like you can't handle being sexual with your partner, request those safe touches. You can give me a foot massage, or you can play with my hair, or let's cuddle on the couch. The things that are always safe for you, and you always welcome them, regardless of how depleted you're feeling.
Yeah, that's such a good example. Mine's definitely my back.
Yeah.
I love when my husband just rubs my back or scratches it. And he honestly, he does it probably every day, like almost every night. And it's like no matter how exhausted I am, I just love it. And it's
Yeah.
funny because I've created my daughters the same way every night. She's like, "Mommy, rub my back and my belly." Like she always wants me to rub her back and her belly, and it's so cute. So I guess you're right. Like I never thought about that. There is always, not maybe always, but for most people, there probably is always an area of the body that is considered safe touch, no matter how tapped out they are.
And it works at filling that cup up for both people, because it is, humans are mostly social creatures and we do crave touch. Sometimes we're not getting the kind of touch we want, or sometimes, touch has been traumatizing, or in our brains, touch leads to other things and therefore becomes unpleasant. Work really hard to identify what your safe touch is, and then communicate that with your partner, because it will go a long way in those moments where you're not connecting intimately.
I think the last thing, and we don't need to talk about this long, is just that those of you who were raised in a certain religious background or a cultural background where you were told a very specific thing about sex and what your duty is as a wife or your duty is as a husband, those scripts, those beliefs can be playing a big role in this, and maybe the guilt or the shame that you're feeling. I don't know what you would recommend for that, Katie, is how do you navigate these deep rooted scripts that you were raised to believe about sex?
Well, I only see them being a problem when the couple can't compromise on them, right? Like if there's some sort of disagreement about what needs to be happening in the relationship, or if one person's coming from one culture, another person's coming from another culture, and then there's tension because of that, that's the only time I ever see it being a problem in a relationship. And I would say, therapy is the answer for everything.
I mean,
Talking
I
about
agree. Yeah.
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 It's so hard to navigate on your own because you don't have that objective third party helping you find a compromise. Because when you're so in your own like bubble, it's so hard to think outside the box and come up with a compromise that might work well for both of you in that relationship.
Yeah, so that's again where communication comes in, and if you find that you're not able to navigate that conversation well with your partner, really, really, truly seeking out a, I would say probably, Katie, I don't know if you agree with this, but working with a specifically a sex psychologist is probably going to be more helpful than just a general psychologist because you have a lot of additional education on this. So, and then if there's a health concern, like a physical issue with your body and being able to be intimate with your partner, that's where pelvic floor PT comes in. Often I would say a lot of people in pelvic floor PT should probably also be seeing Katie.
Same.
They don't often, because it seems to be harder to get people to.
About feelings.
Yeah, it's easier for people to say, oh, I've got a physical problem, than to really talk about what's going on more. But anyways, that's what we're here for. That's our nitty gritty. And so you've got resources if you find that you and your partner aren't able to navigate this yourself. And I hope that this talk today helped give you just some more understanding about the answer, which is there is no amount that you have to have sex with your partner. It is very relationship dependent and person dependent.
There is no answer.
There is no answer. Well, there is an answer. The answer is that there is no set amount.
Well, yes, I feel like the more you know in life about any topic, the answer is always it depends.
It depends. I know. It's so funny. I tell people all the time, I'm like, the more educated you become, the more questions I have, the more you realize how much you don't know. Whenever you meet somebody who is like, really like, I know this, I'm like, oh, you're just not educated enough.
Yeah, you don't know all of the intricacies.
I'm like, if you're that confident, then I'm like, oh, like you have a lot still to go.
Yeah. So find out what the it depends means in your relationship and talk about it with your partner and come up with some sort of plan.
Yep. Last thing, if you guys have anything that you want us to talk about, please send us an email, find us on social media. All of our stuff's listed on these podcasts. But feel free, give us topic ideas. We would love to hear from you. We would love to answer any questions and to know what our listeners are wanting to hear about so that way we can try to deliver that content to you. Have a beautiful rest of your day, and we will join you guys at the next podcast episode.
We are Dr. Molly Hart and Dr. Katie Schubert, and you've been listening to Sex on the Floor podcast. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions and want to get in contact with us, you can follow us on Instagram at Dr. Molly Hart and at Dr. Katie Schubert, on Facebook at Pelvic Balance PT and at Dr. Katie Schubert. And for more information about us on our websites, you can find us at pelvicbalancept.com and at drkatieschubert.com.